Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you. So agenda paper 12A. So agenda paper 12A provides information to the board on a number of transactions that the interpretations committee has discussed and identified that may not fit into existing IFRS standards. So the paper first outlines details of a specific commodity loan transaction that was submitted to the committee. And when discussing this transaction, feedback provided on the committee's outreach activities and to the committee's tentative agenda decision, as well as some of the committee's own discussions, identified a number of other areas of consideration related to that commodity loan transaction that have similar features. The committee requested that we inform the board of these transactions in order for the board to determine whether further work was necessary in this area. The transactions identified by the committee include other commodity transactions. These are discussed in paragraphs 12 to 20 of our paper. Digital currencies, which are discussed in paragraphs 22 to 30. And specific transactions involving emissions allowances in paragraphs 31 to 34. As noted in paragraph 35 of our paper, we think these transactions highlight two possible areas the board could address. The first is investment transactions. This is where entities have invested in items with the aim of benefiting from capital appreciation. And the second type of transaction are cash-like transactions, where entities are using liquid assets in a way that's similar to cash. At this meeting, we are not asking the board to make a decision on whether you would like to add a project on some or all of the transactions or themes identified in this paper. However, for reference, and we've included the factors that the board considered as part of the 2015 agenda consultation on determining the priority of projects, and these can be found in paragraphs 42 of our paper. At this meeting, we're asking whether you have any questions or comments on the contents of this paper, and whether there's any additional information you would like to obtain before being asked whether you'd like to add a research project on some or all of the transactions in the paper. With that, I'll hand back to the board for discussion.
I have always wondered how jewelers deal with swings in the price of gold, but now I understand. Mary?
One of the things I'm struggling with is it's more information I'd like, but I think it's information that we might get in the research process, so kind of chicken and egg, is figuring out how significant, how widespread, how many different jurisdictions, the range of diversity in practice, et cetera, because I think it's always attractive to say, yes, let's add something when we look particularly at that project, and it's only when we did, let's say, the agenda consultation, and we had to stand back and say, it's not that there are duds and real ones, but it's a matter of priority. And having done that, it's really hard to say, okay, you consider this one in isolation as opposed to against the rest of the list. So in response to your question, is there any additional information that you'd like? I don't know if there's anything that you can do that gives, when you bring a paper to the board about should we add a research project or not, that tries to give some indication of the breadth of applicability. Because without that, I don't know how I prioritize it against other things, either our research pipeline that we haven't started, or things that we felt we couldn't put on the research pipeline on a rationing basis.
Doc,
thank you. I think this paper was very interesting, but the transaction of commodity and the transaction of digital currency is, I think, completely different. So I understand that we need something to do with commodity loans. Maybe we can provide some interpretation or a narrow scope amendment is possible. But in the case of digital currency, I think we must be very careful, especially in the case of initial coin offering case. So the difference from the commodity is in the case of digital currency, there is no substances. In the case of commodity, there is a substance, and the gold could be consumed anyway, but the digital currency cannot be consumed. There is no backup of services, no backup of obligations. So if you take an example of ICO, so you issue the initial offering, and then you collect currency, which is the decent currency like US dollar. But on the credit side, there is no obligation. So therefore, it's hard to recognize it as an equity. But on the other hand, you wouldn't need to provide any services at all. So somebody has to take care of blockchain or something, but it's open resources. It's not your really of services to provide. So then can we recognize it as a revenue or not? So it's quite hard to understand. So I'm curious, currently there are many companies who are actually doing ICO. What kind of accounting treatment they are doing at the moment? I'm very curious.
I think everyone's curious, and we corresponded informally with somebody in Japan, and right now there's a company there who's been unable to, because they can't figure out the accounting, their quarterly filing's been now delayed by nine months. They keep getting an extension because their auditors can't agree on the accounting. So I think that's a question. I mean, what is the accounting? You know, you've got the ICOs, but let alone the digital currencies themselves. And, you know, to respond to Mary's point in part, like, we definitely need to do more outreach. Part of the issue that we've encountered in doing some informal outreach is because there's no disclosure requirements as yet, it's sometimes difficult to detect just how much of these items are, where people are putting them in their statements of financial position. And then some people have said to us, well, we're not engaged in transactions involving digital currencies because we can't get a sign off on what the accounting treatment is. So.
There may be, I think that's right, and that's the problem. Mary, the question you raise is something we asked ourselves, and even in thinking about how to put this paper together, it was almost like I was thinking to do almost a full and proper job here, I think it actually would mean investing a lot of time and almost, as you say, doing what you'd picture doing in research. So it was quite hard to work out what to do. I mean, there's clearly, you know, there's various things you'll see from the paper that actually different standard setters are doing. There's maybe some outreach we could do in that respect. It may be that when, you know, because obviously something like Bitcoin has just, I mean, the difference between, you know, December 2016 to December 2017 in terms of the activity there, I just think is enormous. So it may be when people report 2017 information, there may be, you know, and when we see those reports in the public domain, there may be more information. Equally, I think for Claire's point, we don't know, because if there's no specific disclosure requirement, we're not sure what we'll get.
I think there's a good chance that by the time we would have finished the standard, the whole market will have collapsed. But no, seriously, Beryl.
So I guess this is in part what a response to what Tuck said, although it wasn't set up like that when I put the board up. I thought the analysis that you did in paragraphs 35, 36, and 37 was quite a useful analysis for me in thinking about actually taking Bitcoin or whatever the other cryptocurrency is completely out of the equation and thinking rather about the purpose of the investment. And it seems to me that if I then follow that idea of thinking of what we would be doing is we'd be looking at investment transactions and cash-like transactions with the example of a cryptocurrency or a commodity as an example of that type of strategy. That seemed to be what I imagined you were thinking as you developed the paper. Now, that makes a lot of sense to me, but then possibly comes back a little bit to what Mary was saying, is that do we know whether anybody else has thought about these transactions this way? So, I mean, I would not like to see us come up with a IFRS 21 Bitcoin. But it would be useful to have guidance in how you deal with investment categories. And I can think of plenty of other ones, art, that perhaps fall under one of these two categories that we might argue should actually be here because that is the nature of the investment. And just sort of anonymize them. But as I say, do we know that anybody else has approached it that way, or is everybody approaching these as specific transaction types individually?
The Accounting Standards Board of Japan have got an exposure draft out, and they've just taken quite a limited kind of look at these types of currencies, but they're not analysing in between like investment and cash-like transactions. They're more looking at if you're holding them as somebody who just transacts in bitcoins, but without segregating into those kind of categories. The FASB is still at the similar stage to us. They're deciding whether or not to engage in a project, and their question is how much of these is there actually out there? Is it worth doing something or not?
So I think the answer is yeah. We're not aware of people looking at it like that. What was interesting in Craig's analysis that he found was in looking at this way back actually is what helped us in thinking about categories was going back and seeing there was actually IS-25 at one point that covered a broad range of every kind of everything held for investment. Obviously, I imagine the vast majority of what fell into IS-25 was financial instruments and investment properties, and it appears that when specific standards were developed for those two big pots of investments, IS-25 went away, but with it went away some of the more general requirements that might have applied to artworks and other things.
The other point that I thought might be useful about this, and maybe again comes back to Mary's idea just about thinking about it in the context of whether we would say yes to a research process, would be an idea of whether we think we can resolve this problem relatively quickly by picking up something that is in our other standards. So looking at these two types of transactions you've identified in 36 and 37 and saying, well, if that's what we think these are predominantly like, can we pick up the guidance in IFRS 9 or something similar and say these bits and pieces can be applied to these transactions, and essentially you get a comparability and you take a lot of the stress off that cut over point. But back to the point, I think those two are useful, and just understanding better what those paragraphs 36 and 37 are about would certainly help me in thinking about this as a research option.
Sure.
It's a super interesting area, and that gold commodity loan when it came to the Interpretations Committee was an eye-opener for me, not least because the way that I thought about it was so different to the way some of our staff thought about it, so that was an eye-opener as well. But the point that TAC made makes it very clear to me that we'd need to be very careful with scoping, because I came into this thinking about the investor perspective, but I think TAC was actually talking about more the issuer perspective, so the person who's getting hard cash and issuing digital currency, and I'm not sure that I had picked that up as part of the scope of this actually. I thought we were looking here more at if I bought digital currency, how do I account for that purchase?
And I think that's right. I think that's probably all and how we described it in the paper. We probably did think question. About it, yeah, just from that angle.
Thank you,
Gary.
Thank you. Actually, Craig, I thought a really good paper and interesting. I have some mixed feelings about where we go with this thing as I sort of dissecting it down. First of all, emissions allowances, that's already on a pipeline. So you'd say, well, you wouldn't consider that at this point. And I don't know what to do about digital currencies. I agree completely with Tuck and others that digital currencies and commodities are very different things. And maybe the net of the accounting is the same, but I think the business dynamics and contractual terms, they're so different. I just don't feel like they belong in the same project, to my way of thinking. Some of these things we talk about in here, repos, gold lending, some of these things have been around for millennia, whereas Bitcoin and they're new. I'm inclined to think with Hans is maybe let the digital currencies run a little bit longer before we get involved with them. If we think commodities lending, reading a book on medieval banking the other day, they're doing the same thing 1,000 years ago. So it's nothing new in here, and somehow the world has gotten by. I think, assuming we did more work on this, as you suggest, to come back with there's diversity in practice, to me, never does it. It's incomplete by itself. There's diversity in practice then there's diversity in practice that's causing real problems where people are losing money or making ill or uninformed decisioning. That's where diversity gets to be a problem. And I think we need that. Then reflecting on the staffing pie charts, I think you got to ask the question, and I'm on paragraph 42E, the availability of sufficient time from board members and staff. I think I'd challenge you to come back with, if we decided before this, what aren't we going to do? We've got a lot of projects in vogue. We've got a pretty robust pipeline, pretty robust research agenda. I would say, what aren't you going to do if this was important enough to go forward? And I would challenge you on that. Again, resources are finite. If you add something in, something has to go.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is a very interesting paper to gather all kinds of transactions, but I would like to ask whether any kind of a special demand for us to think about the digital currency accounting, because Japan, the government has asked maybe ASBJ to develop account standards. And in the U.S., the Chamber of Digital Commerce here asked the FASB to explore some kind of development. So for us, are there any some kind of stakeholders to ask us to develop the IFRS? I have known that there's even some tax law already they are changing to cover this digital currency issue. So that's the similar taxable income or profit and loss. So that's quite similar to our financial reporting profit and loss. So if we are a little late to respond to this kind of issue, then might be another good idea. So that's what I'm saying, what the stakeholders are asking us to deal with this digital currency.
Nick.
Thank you. So I'd echo what we've heard already about the importance of feeling there's a solution out there and also thinking about being mindful of resources as well. In our recent engagement with investors, these topics have come up, but what actually caught my interest in particular was paragraph 37, when it talked about these are cash flow equivalent transactions, and clearly there's a huge focus with investors on cash flows, and if something else is going on which is equivalent but not being captured, that then is an issue. Again, as Mary says, I don't know how big that issue necessarily is.
Sue?
I think the prioritisation is important, and I'm not sure how we get a handle on that, but I think we do need to think carefully, and it's always dangerous looking at one project in isolation. But just to add on a couple of things, when Mary and I were in Washington in December at the AICPA conference, this was the number one topic. Every single person that stood on that stage was talking Bitcoin or digital currencies more generally. The SEC was talking about it. And while it's, I'm an old fogey and I don't understand digital currencies terribly well, but I think that given how long it can take us to come up with solutions, waiting a while for us might not be the right thing to do in terms of completely parking it, because I think it is a real issue and people have got real accounting questions. They're really trying to account for transactions. So I think we need to be careful not to be dismissive. Personally, I think maybe we should do some more work on it. And also, while I completely acknowledge that there's an absolute fundamental difference between a bar of gold that I can see sitting on this desk and a digital currency, which is a much more intangible style of thing, they are both sources of value, and people are investing in these things with a view to make more money. So there is a really consistent theme between these things, even though their physical form and nature is different. So I think we need to be careful not to be sort of saying, well, there's nothing really behind them, therefore we don't have to, or we shouldn't think about them this way. I think there is a sensible argument for why you can see them as being a logical suite of things to look at side by side.
Mary?
Thinking about the discussion we've had today on this, it strikes me that there are two ways that we could approach the basket of issues. And Trina, I'm kind of reflecting on what you said. One is there's potentially a project that says, without writing requirements for each of those, there could be some work done that tries to identify characteristics of different types that, if you were using the conceptual framework in the existing standards, might point you more to look at this and look at that. So it gives no answers, but it's almost, and this is maybe something that I could think about the interpretations committee thinking about, that said, what are the characteristics of items that would cause you to look more at developing policies based on financial instrument standard, what may be based more on IAS, what would characteristics that would drive you more to investment properties, some without any definitive answers. And I'm weighing this thinking also of Gary's point about how fast do we move, and how big an effect does it have? Are we just trying to maybe kind of group practice so similar characteristics get you similar ways? If, however, the staff thought a bit more about it and said the only way we're going to be able to address this is to do a new standard on other investments that don't fall into, PP&E, equity, and subsidiaries, joint ventures, associates, financial instruments, etc. We have to be upfront that we're facing a let's write a new standard, and no matter how constrained that is, that's not a that's when we really come back to what would we be taking off the agenda to accommodate doing that, and is that more pressing? And those are the only two kinds of projects I can think that we could do. So, it's input, Christopher the Mill.
Martin,
and you ask for more information because if it is really this kind of question, what an investor in this kind of thing should do, could you do some research how difficult it would be to come up with a kind of guidance on that? Because I think it would not be so difficult. And maybe it's a big issue but I think to come up with an accounting standard for that, I cannot currently, based on this paper, not imagine that it should be so difficult.
I think the scope is probably the most important. I mean, I think maybe
scope,
you can read
yes,
it in the paper. I won't give my opinion, but there's an idea of what we might think the measurement should be. So I think just working out the scope might be the key.
I think we have to be careful. First of all, there's so much speculation going on in this market, and the more that official authorities are doing work on this, the more legitimate it becomes, and the more likely people are likely to lose a lot of money. If digital currencies are really going to be a big success because they are a good alternative to the regular money supply with all its manipulation, public authorities will kill it. And I think that's already going on. And you saw that when in Chicago they opened a market for futures, and you saw immediately the price going up because it was a sign everybody's taking this seriously. This is going to go places. So I think we have to be very careful, and we have other things to do. And everybody who invests in a digital currency knows that the only thing that counts is fair value.
What they're doing, though?
Well, I don't know.
So if they're accounting for them at cost, we're not going to be looking good when suddenly something changes dramatically.
I think as well, maybe some are saying, even if I think it's fair value, I'm not sure I can get there under the current literature.
Certainly I'm not required to.
Everybody's talking about it because it's a fad, and I think we have to be careful.
And that's why I think if we are going to take this on, my preference would be to take this on as a more generic project that says, let's focus on those two paragraphs, which
nature
I thought were really important, and focus on the nature of it, absolutely. And the fact that it then sweeps up cryptocurrencies is just a
consequence.
As a do without.
It's a signposting point that Mary made.
Right. I suppose the question we'd got for this meeting wasn't to ask the board to conclude on whether or not we should proceed with a project and what that project should look like. I think next month there's going to be a meeting where you'll look at the research plan more broadly, and we wanted to kind of let you know that we're thinking about this as well, and is this something that should be on the horizon, or is it lower in priority than everything else that's already in the pipeline? But I suppose the question right now is, before we get to that stage, is there anything else you would like us to do? I mean, Mary mentioned potentially additional research to see the scope of the issue, and we can certainly see what we can do on that front. But are there other things that you would want us to do, or also maybe flesh out a little bit more based on this discussion? Okay, well, if we did proceed with a project, what that project might look like, so that then you can...
We could have a conversation with the regulators, prudential regulators, for example. Do they think that we should put effort in this? Because do they think it's going to stay? Do they think it's going to be a big investor issue? Do they think that accounting standard might prevent huge issues from arising? They are looking at it very carefully, much more carefully than we do. So I think that would be the first place to go. Mary?
Two last things. One is, I think you're right to flag up emission allowances in here as, you know, an example of the type of investment. The footnote I'd add, and maybe remember to bring it when you come bring back the papers, the bigger challenge with emission rights was not so much the asset side, although that did present challenges. It was accounting for the scheme as a whole, because there's a sense that when you accounted for the legs independently, you got what some perceived as accounting mismatches. So that's a real difference between the question of how do you account for these assets, the certificates that you hold, the rights, versus the scheme.
And I'll only add into your point, Mary, I'm not sure if it's clear, but clearly any conversation we were having in this context about this was only for people that were holding them solely for speculative investment purposes. We weren't going to touch on the other, polluted pricing mechanism schemes at all.
And the other is, and this is a piece of technical analysis, the paper assumes, says in paragraph 23, there are no specific accounting requirements for digital currencies. I think the first hurdle you'd have to get over to get to that conclusion is to confirm that they're not in the scope of 38. Yeah. I'm not saying they should be in. I don't have a view on it, but just that's the one that it strikes me that I'm not clear, and it may be worth that analysis, because if you come back and say, you can argue that they're caught, maybe that scope issue, just so if we think it's more appropriate, people get pointed to the conceptual framework to work through rather than gotcha in something that doesn't make sense. Or maybe we, look at it and say it does make sense. I don't have a view, but that's the technical analysis I can see.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one thing that I'll just throw out as well that I heard a bit, and Craig and Claire, tell me if I don't think we're overcommitting, is back to something you said, Mary. I picture if we could, that maybe if we could, when we bring something back to you, that can maybe, if we could have a first look and thinking about scoping, so thinking about maybe the option that you talked about, Mary, which is the not creating a whole new standard, but thinking about, what might it take if we almost were to look at the scope of some other standards that are already there? Are there a bundle of transactions or the characteristics of things that we fit, and I'm just throwing this out, that are more, of investment nature, that therefore the accounting could be, like investment properties, or are there, characteristics of things or transactions that, work more like financial instruments, and therefore, we'd look at the scope of the financial instrument standards as opposed to writing a whole new standard that has to deal with recognition and measurement. So,
posting project.
So maybe I'm looking at Craig. Are you going to kill me if I say? But maybe if we can, that what we can do is just have a thought about that. But if what maybe would be the resource, or roughly, or how much work do we think might be involved in thinking about a project that would focus more on the scopes of existing standards as opposed to something else?
Good idea.
Okay.
Thank you. Agenda paper 12B then discusses a request received by the Interpretations Committee to remove the reference to cash flows for taxation from paragraph 22 of IS 41. And in this agenda paper, we provide information on the history of this requirement and what the current requirements say, and any information obtained by the Interpretations Committee through conducting outreach. In September, the committee recommended that as part of the next annual improvements process, the board propose an amendment to paragraph 22 of IS 41 to remove the requirement to exclude cash flows for taxation when an entity measures fair value. The committee's reasons are discussed in paragraph 20 of our paper. We discuss transition requirements for the proposed amendment in paragraphs 21 to 27 of our paper, and we recommend that the board require entities to apply the amendment prospectively to the measurement of fair value of biological assets after the effective date of the amendments, and with earlier permission or earlier application permitted. The questions for the board are on page 7 of the paper. The first question is whether you agree with the committee's recommendation to propose, as part of the next annual improvement cycle, an amendment to paragraph 22 of IS 41.
Mary?
Two thoughts. On question one, agree as part of the next AIP. On its own, have no objection to that, but it might make sense to hold off a bit and see where we get to with the IFRS 13 PIR, if there's any standard setting that comes out of that. And I'm not saying I think there should be, but if there's anything, even if it's relatively minor, I would hate for us to have an amendment that relates to how you measure fair value in an AIP while we have maybe something else coming. I'm not trying to wish for something out of the PIR.
Yep.
I just want us to think about coordinating on that. The second is, if the answer to question one is yes, and since I gave a qualified yes, I qualified to comment on that, do we agree with the recommendation to do it prospectively? I actually have some concern about that because this is an instance, I think, in which fair value is the measurement basis rather than an episodic, reset. And so it means if you say you only do it prospectively and it's a change, that you don't have comparability about the basic measurement basis of the item. And so, well, I appreciate and think it's a good point about when it would be impracticable. I would have thought we would have said retrospective unless impracticable. Here's when we think it might be impracticable, in terms of the use of hindsight, et cetera, because I worry about having disconnects in the fundamental measurement basis. It's a question about that. It's a recommendation of prospective only.
Amaro.
So maybe a question to the staff and Mary. So in 27, staff suggests this prospectively because two aspects, potential use of hindsight, but most important to me, the theoretical similarity in fair value measurement. So what Mary is saying, I'm hearing she disagrees with the theoretical aspect, at least. Hmm. Is that so?
I guess, theoretically, if you discount post-tax cash flows at the post-tax discount rate versus pre-tax cash flows at the pre-tax cash flow rate, you might get the same answer. I think as we noted in one of our paragraphs, people responded to our outreach to say that some people might have difficulty in finding out what the post-tax rate is or pre-tax rate is, and that might cause some differences in practice, although we're not entirely sure how much of a difference that might be.
I'm just not sure about the cost-benefit of requiring people personally to do this retrospectively.
Yeah, that's
That's I think that's where we were falling out on it, but for those, for those two reasons that weighed into our thinking about cost-benefit.
But maybe we should emphasize the cost-benefit more.
Yeah. And these two aspects are fairly important as well.
Okay. Can we support staff's recommendation?
14.
Okay, so that means we are ready to...
Did I overlook?
Yeah, you're done, right? You're done. Okay, Raghava.